welcome to the Ithaca Radio Hour, a weekly program of news, views, culture, and events in our area. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Today is Monday, May 19th, 2003. This week, we present an interview with Irish musician Karen Casey, and you'll hear from an Ithaca resident with plans to give fifth graders the new volume of Harry Potter. First, views on New York State drug laws. May 8th marked the 30th anniversary of the enactment of the Rockefeller drug laws. These laws are notorious for their harsh penalties for minor drug offenses and have drawn criticism and protest for years. Sylvie Genenthal covered the recent Drop the Rock rally on the Ithaca Commons.
The campaign to reform the Rockefeller drug laws has gained momentum recently. The Tompkins County Legislature has passed a resolution urging reform, and New York State Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton is co-sponsoring a repeal bill that would affect major change. With the New York State Legislature's recent override of the governor's veto, it may be a good time for people to push for serious reform. The following are some excerpts from the May 8th rally sponsored by the Tompkins County Interfaith Campaign to Reform the Rockefeller Drug Laws. First, we'll hear from Tom Terese, Executive Director of Prisoners Legal Services of New York.
When people talk about the Rockefeller drug laws, they talk about the main law that was passed about 30 years ago under Nelson Rockefeller. And those particular laws have the harshest penalties attached to them. For example, a state judge is mandated to give a sentence of no less than 15 to life for someone who's convicted of selling 2 ounces or possessing 4 ounces of a narcotic substance. The thing that is important here is that the judge has no choice. The judge can't look to the individual's background or character. And they can't look for alternatives. It's a mandatory sentence. But that's not the only draconian law in this state. Many more people are locked up under another set of laws that really shouldn't be tied to Rockefeller's name because they came in oftentimes through Democratic administrations and as a result of Democratic action. And those are the second felony offender laws. Under that set of laws, it requires that a judge impose a prison term for a second felony, regardless of what that felony is. And there are many more people in New York State prisons under those laws than are in under the initial Rockefeller drug laws. But in the debate, they talk about all those laws together as one. The thing that's important to realize is that the people who are serving terms of 15 to life and those long sentences are probably less than 1,000 in the state prison system right now. It's a lot of people, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of lives that have been ruined. But there are over 18,000 drug offenders in New York State prison today, and most of those are in under the second felony offender laws. In the 80s, the state incurred debts of over $2 billion just to build the state prisons to house those individuals. And if you take a look at a graph of the decline in funding for state education and the increase in funding for prisons, you'll see that they almost parallel each other. The state made a decision that they were going to put their money into prisons and not into education. And even today, it costs close to $600 million to house most of these prisoners in New York State prisons. To show you the difference, in 1980, before these laws really were in full swing, about 11% of the prison population were incarcerated on drug offenses. Today, it's about 40% of the prison population, so it has totally changed the character and the nature of the system. 31% of the drug offenders in the state today, that's over close to 6,000 people, are locked up not for selling, but simply drug possession. These are users. That's over 6,000 people sitting in state prisons today. It costs close to $200 million to house them in state prisons. In 1999, almost 80% of the people who are in on drug felonies, whether it's for possession or sale, had no violent felony conviction. The real problem, again, are people who are in there for drug possession and often for small amounts. A reference was made before about the racist nature of the laws, and it's certainly, if you look at the numbers, there can be no doubt about it. Study after study have shown that the majority of people who use all the legal drugs of all categories in the nation and in New York State are white. Yet in New York State, African Americans and Latinos comprise about 93% of the drug offenders in the state prison system. There's no question about it. There are other cost-effective alternatives. Every study, or at least the most recent study that's important, as the RAND study in 1997 showed that drug treatment is 15 times more effective than incarceration or punishment in reducing recidivism and turning people's lives around. Right now in New York State, it costs $32,000 a year to lock somebody up in state prison. I guess that's close to Cornell's tuition. I don't know what it is now, but it's an astounding figure. When you take a look at what it would cost to divert those people into drug treatment programs, cost a little more than half of that, $17,000 on average. And outpatient drug treatment programs, which many of these people could take advantage of and really benefit from, cost between $3,000 and $4,000. There's no question about it that we've chosen as a society to use the most expensive way to deal with this particular problem. I think it's important that, to keep in mind that the 18,000 people who are sitting in jail now as a result of these laws could be out on the streets, could be involved in treatment programs, but could also be working and being productive members of society. So I think that everybody ought to pay attention to this issue, to keep as much pressure as possible on the governor in particular, who seems to be backing away from everything these days, and hold him to his campaign promise that he wants to see real reform.
The next speaker is Gino Bush, founder of the Circle of Recovery.
Many people out here, particularly African Americans and Latinos, that get involved in the drug game, get involved for economic reasons. They have no choice. I don't know if any of you folks ever been to some of the worst neighborhoods in New York City, like Brownsville in Brooklyn, the east side of Harlem, the South Bronx. If you folks have never been there, then you really can't even envision what it's like. Even if you saw it in the newspaper, you wouldn't really understand it. But many, many people out in the community get involved with drugs because they have no choice. And there's two reasons that many people get involved with drugs. One is to sedate themselves because they can't deal with everyday life and all the racism that they have to confront on a daily basis. And the other one is to try to make some money to support either themselves or their families. That's a fact. And it's undeniable.
Barbara Lifton is the New York State Assemblywoman for the 125th District.
I want to underscore everything that's been said before me, that we're spending enormous amounts of money putting people in prison under the Rockefeller drug laws. The last figures I saw in imprisonment were more like $70,000 a year per prisoner in New York State. And drug treatment would be so much more cost-effective, never mind the terrible waste of human life that is happening in our state. It is definitely racist in its application, and it's way past time for reform. One of the best indicators, as if those weren't enough, is that the people who enacted, who first proposed this legislation, Republican senators, John Dunn, Senator Dunn, and Senator Barkley, 30 years ago, are some of the biggest proponents out there for reform. I am a co-sponsor of the Jeff Aubrey bill that would deal with the 10,000 nonviolent drug offenders that we have in our prisons. The governor's proposal that's in the budget this year, in his early budget proposal, would deal with 500 of those 10,000 people in jail. Only 500 would be affected by the governor's proposal. There's some change there, but it's nothing like the change that we should be having and we should be working for and fighting for. So I would urge that you start gearing up again, do what you were doing last year and the year before, and really getting a statewide movement going again on reform of these Rockefeller drug laws, because especially when you talk about the savings involved, it could move a lot of people to advocate for change here.
The Jeff Aubrey bill Barbara Lifton is sponsoring would accomplish four essential objectives. It would restore sentencing discretion to trial judges in all drug cases, make sentencing reform retroactive so that current inmates can petition the courts for review of their sentences, expand funding available for alternatives to incarceration, including drug treatment, job training and education programs, so that judges have an appropriate place to send the offenders they decide should not be imprisoned, and it would reduce sentence lengths for drug offenses. Pastor Sonia Hicks works with Offender Aid and Restoration.
I would hope that we could come together as a community, not just here, but our voice as well as other voices coming together can make a difference. I said to an inmate recently, the people that were protesting the war, it's not going to work. And he said, had not Martin Luther King marched and protested and people with him, things wouldn't be changed now in the South. And I had to think about that. If we don't, as a community, come together to really say there's got to be a better way than what we're offering people who have found the only way to survive is selling drugs, then it's not going to change.
Mary Katzenstein is a professor of government at Cornell University.
I'm just going to end with a statement by the person who is the head of the Division of Parole. Somebody who has been working in parole for so many years and who really knows the system well. And this is what this person said. Prison infantilizes people. It tells them what to do every minute of the day. When we release a woman and we figure she's going to be able to assume the role of mother automatically, we are kidding ourselves. It doesn't make sense. What we are doing is destroying families. We are not rebuilding them. And we just have to get clear about that.
For more information on the Rockefeller drug laws and the statewide movement to repeal them, visit droptherock.org.
Thanks to Sylvie Ginnenthal for that report. This is the Ithaca Radio Hour.
Rockefeller, what a fella. He was a good old boy with the slave master's toy. Rockefeller, from the aristocracy, his legislative ploy is the slave master's key. Straight down from the aristocracy came the racist, brutal Rockefeller decree. Let no slave be free. These words are hard to say, they cut like a knife, and it ain't me. Gosh golly, sakes alive, things ain't changed much since 1865. Gosh golly, sakes alive, things ain't changed much in 1865. We're running a slave trade in America. We're running a slave trade in America.
On Thursday, May 22nd, Irish singer Karen Casey will hold a concert to benefit the Ithaca Catholic Worker and CUSLAR, Committee on U.S.-Latin American Relations. Last week, she talked to Christina Bedux from her home in Ireland.
Hello.
Hello, Karen. This is Christina from Ithaca Community Radio.
How you going?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Going well.
Okay, great. Some of us here in Ithaca have heard you play with the band Solas, and since making that break, you've put out quite a few solo albums. Can you tell me more about that transition and what that success feels like?
Well, I suppose I left Solas about 4 years ago now, I think. And yeah, I've just kind of, I suppose I've had big changes in my own life. I had a baby girl called Muirin. You know, that's changed an awful lot. It's great, you know, it kind of grounds you. And then I've put out three albums since then. It's going well. It's kind of up and down. I think when you leave a band as popular as Solas, you know, you kind of have to go back. Well, first of all, you have to kind of build up your own repertoire and then build up your own sound. And so I think it takes people a while to get used to the transition.
I see you've also been doing some work with the Brothers Valley. How did that transpire?
Well, I live with one of them. I live with Niall Vallely.
That's convenient.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's great. It means that we can all travel around together, myself and Niall, and Robbie's great guitar player, Robbie Overson, and also Paul Meehan. He plays the guitar and mandolin and banjo. He'll be with us, both husband will be with us in Ithaca, you know, and we just, we can, myself and Niall can travel around with Muireann as well, so it's good, we can kind of keep, you know, keep the family together.
Right. Now, you're coming to Ithaca to play a benefit concert for the Ithaca Catholic Worker in Cuslar. Can you tell me more about how and why you became involved with this benefit?
Well, I've done 3 anti-war benefits here in Ireland over the last few months. And I suppose that I really feel that it's important, you know, to be doing, to be very vocal in my opposition to this war. I kind of feel also that people in America, particularly on the left, really need our support. I think essentially, you know, if the people on the left don't kind of feel empowered and aren't mobilized, well then really we really are all in trouble, because kind of they're our only hope really to get Bush out. I kind of feel that it's vital to try and oppose Bush, and it's not just Bush. I mean, it's very relevant to Ireland as well, with Tony Blair and also Bertie Ahern, our Taoiseach, or our Prime Minister. You know, we have the warplanes landing at Shannon here, and so that really kind of it's really illegal in Ireland for warplanes to be landing here. And so I think we really all need to kind of come together and try and galvanize all the support we can and kind of support one another at this time.
After this benefit, where will we hear or see you next? Where will you be performing after this?
Well, I'm doing 2 weeks altogether in the States. We're going to New York, going to the Blarney Star, we're going to Boston, and then we'll be back over in the States in August for a lot of the festivals. So, you know, we're over and back an awful lot. We're over every 2 or 3 months for about a month. I should say I have a website. It's just KarenCasey.com if anybody wants to find out where that's how I find out where I'm going.
Great. do you have anything else you'd like to share with us?
No, I mean, I just would try and encourage people to come out. You know, it's going to be a good night of songs and tunes from the lads, and hopefully some sort of interesting conversation in between. And I think the Gradys are going to put on a bit of a play as well, so that's always interesting.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, and I thank you for your time, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on May 22nd.
Thank you.
The concert will be held at 7:30 p.m. this Thursday at Ithaca High School's Culp Auditorium. Tickets are $18 and can be purchased from Small World Music, Cuslar, or Alternatives Library, and Annabelle Taylor Hall on the Cornell campus. You're listening to the Ithaca Radio Hour.
This world is made with sweat and toil, pushy muscle and elbow oil. We can't lie too long in the shade, 'cause every day must be remade. Some days we fall, some days we fry. In the end we all must die. Our rotten flesh and broken bones will feed the ground that we call home. Will feed the ground that we call home.
And if that goes for a fallen tree, this song will go on after me. So lift your heart and dry your eyes. It's another day to live and die. Another day to live and die.
Run naked in the wild, sing the beauty of a newborn child. I like the alchemist of old. I've tried to spin my straw to gold. Most times a giver, sometimes a thief. So full of hope but prone to grief. And between freedom and despair, I know the truth is lying there. I know the truth is lying there.
This sprout grows from a fallen tree. This song will go on after me. So lift your heart and dry your eyes.
I've run this race the best I could. It's a short time here and a long path. Same stories in both our paths. So take this guitar when I'm gone. Write your rhymes and pass it down. And write your rhymes and pass it down. From a fallen tree, this song will go on after me. So lift your heart and dry your eyes. It's another day to live and die. Another day to live and die. Another day to live and die.
As fans of the series know, the new Harry Potter book is released this June. However, the $30 hardcover is too expensive for many young readers. One Ithaca resident is trying to change this. Lara Ratzloff reports.
An avid Harry Potter reader herself, Azula Sue realized that the high price of the latest edition makes it impossible for some fans to get a hold of a copy. Not able to buy the book for herself without first addressing this issue, Azula has set up the Bring Harry Home Fund to help purchase books for some Ithaca children.
Like so many other people, I was very excited about the new Harry Potter coming out. And when at last the date was announced, she told me that the cover price was going to be $30. And I said, well, what are we going to do for, you know, low-income people? And she said, nothing. And I said, really? And I said, when does the paperback come out? And she said, oh, it's just like regular books. The paperback will not be out for a year. So I immediately was very jaw-dropped and saddened by that, thinking, but, you know, poor kids have been waiting just as long as the rest of us. Why should they have to wait an additional year or, you know, have to fight with other people trying to get a library copy? This is a book that's going to be over 800 pages, by the way. So if you check it out at the library, it's not necessarily going to come back very quickly. And then I just thought, well, I don't have a choice. This has to be done. I cannot get this book without also buying as many copies as I possibly can for as many, you know, poor kids as I possibly can. In my ideal world, I would be handing every poor child in this community a new, beautiful, hardback, all of their own. But I am a very humble means, and I'm not sure that I'll be able to do that, but I'm going to do the best that I can. I've basically decided that either with help or without help, I am going to provide 23 copies of the new Harry Potter book. Oh, Order of the Phoenix, by the way, for those of you who do not know, to Beverly J. Martin Elementary School. Three of them will go to the library, and the remaining 20 will go to each member of the fifth grade class. If I get help, that would be great, but I'm pretty determined to do it either way. Even if that means, you know, I just don't eat for a month or so, because I really want to do this, and it's at least something I can do. It's not providing it to every, you know, member of the community like my greater vision is, but at least it's something. And the librarian over at Beverly J. Martin is very excited. What I'm trying to do in the long run is something really enormous, but right now I want to make sure that I can actually do it, so it made sense to keep the focus small. The book comes out June 21st. School gets out for the summer June 24th, which means I get to, you know, bring them these books before school's out for the summer, and that's really, really cool. And they're all big Harry Potter fans, and they're all readers, and Harry Potter is about, like any good book, it's about options and about beauty and truth. So hey, you know, let's give that to as many kids as we can. My book buying friend, feeling quite encouraged by this and wanting to participate in the best way that she can is giving me a discount. So what that means is $20 will buy a book. So if, you know, 20 people give me $1, if 40 people give me 50 cents, that's one more book. If folks have more money burning a hole in their pocket, they can walk over to Alternatives, write a check to Bring Harry Home. That's Bring Harry Home, and then walk up to their friendly teller and say, "Hi, I have money that needs to go into Ozula Sue's account, care of Bring Harry Home." And they'll know exactly how to do it.
For more information about the Bring Harry Home Fund, ask at Alternatives Federal Credit Union or go to our website.
The Comic Book Club of Ithaca presents From Story Idea to the Silver Screen. Professional animator Warren Greenwood, who has worked for Disney and other studios, will show you exactly how an animated cartoon is made. That's Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 at the Tompkins County Public Library. Ithaca City residents will have the opportunity to vote for local school budgets and school board candidates on June 3rd. There will be a budget presentation May 19th at 7 p.m. and a school board candidate forum on May 28th at 7 p.m. Both events will be held in the Ithaca High School cafeteria. Be informed. Make your vote count. This week, a national conference on science in the university, taking place at Cornell, looks at the commercialization of academic research and pays particular attention to the plant breeding activities at Cornell. The conference will be held in 115 Ives Hall on the Cornell campus Tuesday and Wednesday, May 20th and 21st, and is free and open to the public. For a complete agenda, visit ilr.cornell.edu. Students throw out a staggering quantity of good and useful items when they leave town every year. The Student Reuse Project seeks to divert these items from the waste stream and put them to use by people in the community who can use them. SRP is organizing a 3-day event over Memorial Day weekend to pick up these discarded items from departing college students. This is the third year, and last year, more than $2,500 was raised at the big sale in June. This year, 50% of net proceeds go to support 88.1 FM, Ithaca Community Radio, to help keep programs like Democracy Now!, Free Speech Radio News, Unwelcome Guests, and the Ithaca Radio Hour on the air. If you can help make this year's project happen, please contact Herb Sussman at hsussmann@twcny.rr.com or 539-6779. This week's show was produced by Jesse Lind, Jeff Kirby, Lara Ratzloff, and Sylvie Ginnenthal. Special thanks to Christina Bedox. Our theme music is an instrumental version of Circus by Crow Greenspun. During the show, we played music from Hank Roberts and Wiggy Dogboy. For online information about the music we've played and contact info for calendar events we've announced, go to our webpage at ithacaradio.org/radiohour. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week.
The Ithaca Radio Hour is a project of Ithaca Community Radio and is produced at Rep Studio. For more information about ICR, visit our website at ithacaradio.org. You're listening to WEOS 89.7 Geneva, broadcast in Ithaca by ICR on 88.1, or WHRW 90.5 Binghamton.